Welcome back to Mac and Cube in the Morning. Was a great first Thursday of college football. Hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. I thought it was just tremendous. Absolutely awesome. And look forward to another 8 games tonight, a million games tomorrow, 1 game on Sunday, and 1 game on Monday. So we're just getting started, ladies and gentlemen. Keep your bullets in the chamber. Don't go spending all your money on some first half under today, that's for sure. That's the only advice I'll give you, because our friends at Atlas Senior Living, they're as good as it gets. They have independent living. They have memory care. They have assisted living. Whatever you need or whatever you want, you can get it with Atlas Senior Living. With communities throughout the Southeast, in Alabama, in Kentucky, in Georgia, South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, and coming soon to the great state, my home state of Texas. So whether you enjoy painting, hiking, gardening, water aerobics, cards, shopping with friends, current movings, large get-togethers, or playing the numbers throughout the course of a weekend, perhaps a college football weekend, Atlas Senior Living has you covered. They bring you Chris the Bear Felica every single Friday. Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. I survived Boise plus 6.5 last night, which was a late ad. Once that number hit 6.5, I'm like, that's a little too many. And it just goes to show you a lot of times, wait it out, and if a number hits a certain point, I felt bad for those who had Boise plus 5.5, because Broncos were definitely the right side in the game, but that point mattered.
Oh, you think? Several examples of that last night, ironically enough. How about Ohio State dropping from 14 to 13.5 in some places there right before kickoff?
that was ridiculous. Yeah, that was a game that the only thing that I kind of liked in that game was the over, and then when I heard the weather, I was like, "Yeah, let me be a little careful there. New quarterback, could be some wet balls. See if Tanner Morgan can throw in that range." So I didn't, and then obviously the weather wasn't as bad as they initially thought it might be, and the game flew over with ease. But have you seen an update this morning on Ibrahim?
I have not yet.
It didn't look good. It looked like either a foot or an Achilles. So hopefully it's not, because that kid's a really good back and an underrated player, and I was having a great game.
Man, it was such a bummer to see that. It kind of took the wind out of the sails there for a moment. I was riding high. I think all of us as college football fans were riding high last night. And everyone's pulling for Ibrahim. And to see that pop on the left leg, it's like, oof, I don't know what it is. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to speculate. But my gut tells me it's not good. So fingers crossed for him as we hopefully will get update as to his diagnosis later in the day. Bear, let's get to some of the games coming up tonight. Games that we're very much looking forward to. North Carolina and Virginia Tech is a game that features a top 10 team on the road. First time fans will be back in Blacksburg quite a while, so you know it'll be jumping. I don't know how to play it. Like, part of me thinks this is way, way, way too few points for North Carolina, given the firepower that they have and the question marks that Virginia Tech has. But this line just stinks to me. How should we evaluate this line?
And this line is climbing like I thought it would. I thought this game was going to hit 6, and it has indeed hit 6, and it's actually 6.5 at FanDuel right now. So I would... This is probably a buy point on Virginia Tech. Look, I like North Carolina. I picked North Carolina to win the ACC, but I think this is a very dangerous spot. This is a game where if North Carolina is to meet the expectations that so many people have for them this year, they got to go on the road and win. They scored 50-something points last year. I know they have a bunch of new guys on offense, but I think with Chandler and Josh Downs and Corrales back there, they'll be able to do that. But Virginia Tech now is a home underdog. Last three times they've been a dog against a team not named Clemson, they've won the game outright. So this is a spot like last year. North Carolina went on the road as a massive favorite against a team they were much better than, Florida State, and lost the game. It would not surprise me to have this be one of those games. You look up tonight in the fourth quarter, and you see it's 27-23 Virginia Tech. in the fourth quarter, and Howell's got the ball and is on his way to leading them to a game-winning drive.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I cannot pull the trigger on North Carolina. I just can't. It just doesn't. Yeah,
I wouldn't play North Carolina right now at that number. If you want to play the Tar Heels, I would wait, and maybe you get lucky, and maybe the Hokies take the lead, and then you can maybe get Carolina minus 2.5 or 3 after a first score. But I would not lay 6, 6.5 for Carolina right now.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. Michigan State Northwestern, another very trendy game tonight. It's one of the two games that's a doubleheader on ESPN. Michigan State right now catching 3.5. It opened at 6. That number's moving fast. I really like Michigan State in this spot, Bear. I got them, I think, probably around 4.5, maybe even 5 in some spots. But now that the line is steaming in the right direction, how do you think we should play this game? And I think a game that's going to feature pretty good defensive play and below average offensive play on both sides.
Yeah, I think this, the way the line has moved, it's more an anti-Northwestern move as it is a pro-Michigan State move. This is a series that the underdogs have done very well, and the underdogs won outright 4 of the last 5 and 5 of the last 7 years. So I would expect a closest type game, but I'm kind of invested on this to begin with because I have a Michigan State under 5 wins season win total. So I'm probably going to stay away from this because if Michigan State were to win, that would put a dent in my win total. But if they were to lose, this is one of those toss-up type games that I expected them to lose. So I don't know. If I do anything here, maybe it's Michigan State on the money line. But I have a feeling Pat Fitzgerald's crew is going to show up tonight. These are typically the types of games when people expect them to be bad and disappoint. Yeah, they lost the quarterback, they lost their coordinator, lost 2 first-round picks as well, so they're clearly not going to be the type of team that they were last year. But I just don't have a ton of respect right now for the personnel on the Michigan State side of the ball.
Yeah, they should be more explosive than Northwestern, but what does that tell you? You know, it doesn't it's not like we're featuring, it's not like, we're talking about Explosive City here. We're talking about a very average team going up against another very average team. One just happens
We've heard for how many years now that Hunter Johnson is the next great thing.
Yeah, well,
I don't
forever.
Think that's ever going to come to fruition.
I think they're going to miss Peyton Ramsey more than we realize, and I also think that Northwestern's going to stink this year. So I would take Michigan State all day long in this particular matchup, feel really good about it. I look to another game from last night that probably a lot of people tune in, tune out, who cares? Arizona State against Southern Utah, all right? The reason why this matters to me is that Southern Utah lost last week 45-14 to San Jose State. Arizona State sitting there, they beat them 41-14. So San Jose State actually slightly more convincing than Arizona State in the victory against the same opponent. Why does that matter? Because San Jose State's catching 14.5 this weekend against the USC Trojans. I love San Jose State in this spot. I think Nick Starkel's a day 2 quarterback prospect. I really believe that. If he can play the way he played last week by anticipating throws and throwing guys open, they're going to give SC all they want. 14.5 for the Trojans. Which way are you leaning?
14.5? Wow, you found a did you buy that hookup? And you find a 14.5?
Come on,
that,
man,
that's a whole lot of 14s.
I'm early entry, Bear. Come on, I'm way ahead of you. These bets are placed 3 weeks ago. You know, no, I'm just kidding. No, 14.5 is where I saw it.
No, you're not. I would. This is tough for me because I think San Jose State is going to be another one of those public underdogs this week, just because of how good they looked last week and hesitancy and questions on USC. If I had to play the game on the spread ETS, I would probably still lean towards taking San Jose State, just because they do have the game under their belt. SC has got bigger and more important games in their minds down the road. So these Mountain West teams, a lot of times when they get into these non-conference games, they don't fare well. So I'd be careful here. If anything, you might just want to consider opening up a money line parlay and playing SC in that. Because as much grief as Clay Helton gets for, he gets upset all the time, he doesn't win. Under Clay Helton, SC's 24-0 outright. as a double-digit favorite. So they don't lose these games outright. Maybe they don't cover, but they don't get upset in the sense that they lose a game on the field. So you can find a couple of other games out there to throw in a money line parlay with SC, and maybe you can try and turn a couple of 14 or 17-point favorites into around even money on one of those.
Love that. Speaking of money line parlays, might have Alabama in one. They were 12-1. So I think that's it. That one, I think a lot of people closed a parlay out on. I might have an 8-teamer with Alabama in it, and who knows how it's going to do. Might be 3-0, though, knock on wood. Bear, when we look at Alabama against Miami, a lot of angles here. The line right now hovering around 19, 19.5, depends on where you're at. I feel comfortable laying the points, but I think it could be a slow start for Alabama. I would be intrigued by potentially taking Miami in the first half and then Alabama for the game. I also am moved a little bit by the over possibility. That line opened at 67.5 in one place, 62 in other places. It's all the way down to 61, 62. How would you play the total, and how would you anticipate this game going from one half to the other?
At 61, I would consider going over just because this is a Miami team that really struggled to stop people last year, especially on the ground. And I think this Alabama team is going to be more along the lines of a team that we were used to seeing from Nick Saban. Running game, defense. And so I would lean towards going over 61 there. I was joking all week. I was curious if we would see a prop out there anywhere. Will Miami hold the lead at any point in the game? Because Alabama, they've gone 37 straight quarters without trailing in a game. That third quarter against Georgia is the last time they've trailed in a game. So Miami even taking the lead in this game would be a monumental achievement. The only advantage Miami has here is experience. They are one of the more experienced veteran teams in the quarterback with a sixth-year quarterback, it seems like, in De'Ara King. An offensive line that brings guys back, guys in the secondary who have been around a while. So that is the one advantage that that Miami does have. Yeah, how about a parlay of will Amari Carter get a targeting penalty parlayed with will Miami have the lead at any point in the game? You think we can find a book that'll put that up there?
I think you could find one.
I would lay the points with Alabama.
Yeah, I think that's the side I believe most of the money and most of the tickets are on, and it's hard to see why not. Clemson and Georgia.
By the way, homage to my man Stanford Steve. By the way, as I look up and see the scores, how our guy likes those seats and win totals that you're gonna know early. Well, you're gonna know early with UNLV because they just lost last night to Eastern Washington. So
yeah, how does
it's
that
gonna
make
be pretty much impossible for the Rebels to hit that over. So if you got UNLV under that 1.5. I think you could probably catch that ticket right now.
Yeah, I think Tulsa under as well after the loss to UC Davis. Things
David
not looking
Collins
good.
Isn't walking through that door.
No, that's true. And neither are the two corners who transferred to Missouri, but more on them here a little bit later. Clemson and Georgia Bear, 3 points is the number right now. You can actually, in some places, find it. No, that's where it opened. It opened at 2, 3.5. Some people have it all over the dang place. But right now, 3 is kind of the consensus number. I still like Clemson. I know Georgia has circled this game. I know Georgia roster top to bottom, probably slightly more talented. I like the quarterback better at Clemson. I like the pass catchers better at Clemson. I like the defensive line at Clemson just as much. And I think Clemson's ability to cover those receivers from Georgia is going to be the difference in the game. 3 points is the number, Bear. Which way are you leaning?
Well, have you missed the last two games that Clemson has played against transfer quarterbacks in the college football playoff with Joe Burrow and Justin Fields and allowing 848 yards and 11 touchdown passes? So I'd be a little hesitant on Clemson's ability to defend. I mean, yeah, I get the respect for Brent Venables. Look, this is a tough game for me, and I don't know how involved I'd want to be. It's because all of these rumors that depending on who you believe and who you hear and listen to and what you read, like rumblings out there that Clemson's not going to have Justin Ross, they're not going to have Davis, they're not going to have Nolan Turner. So it's like, is that true? Does Georgia have COVID issues because their team doctor tested positive. So this feels like 2020 all over again. But I don't know, even without Smith in the secondary, how much Georgia really respects those Clemson receivers. I think they feel, in my opinion, surprisingly good about that matchup. I think they feel that DJ Uiagalelei is going to try and show that arm off and not really take a lot of the underneath stuff that might be available to him. I think Georgia feels really good about this matchup. So if I had to play the game, I would be on the other side here with you. I would take Georgia on the money line, or rather than just take +2.5, I would just take Georgia to win the game outright.
Love it. I think that'll be really interesting. Of course, that game, 7:30 Eastern time, 6:30 here locally on ABC. LSU and UCLA, a game that a lot of people are looking at, Bear, one that interests me an awful lot. I think you're getting LSU on sale. UCLA is extremely trendy, but getting LSU with a 2.5-point line, man, I like UCLA. I think that they're going to cause some problems for sure, and I like the over, but the amount of love that UCLA is receiving after last week's performance against Hawaii is a little bit too much for me. LSU wins the game convincingly. I think 7 to 10 points is fair, and I like the over. How do you feel about that one in the Rose Bowl?
I would agree with the over because I'm still not sure on LSU's defense if last year was a real or if it's just an aberration and coordinator changes will make a difference. But I agree with what you're saying out here. This is the most intriguing game of the weekend for me. What UCLA can back up and legitimize that win. If they happen to win, it will be a massive win for the Pac-12. And LSU comes in with its own questions with new coordinators over the place, a new quarterback, the defensive problems they had last year. Was that really a concern, or was it just a one-year blip? I think tomorrow will go a really long way in answering both of those questions. I have my questions about LSU, but I would tend to agree with you. I think, anytime you win a game handily, you don't want to say it's the worst thing that can possibly happen, but the fact that UCLA now has gotten the full attention of LSU with that big win, I would think in the way LSU started the year last year, you're probably going to get a very big effort from LSU on Saturday. And again, if I had to play the game, I would take LSU, but I'm probably going to stay away for this one because Chip Kelly's a friend and I would love to see him win.
It would be great to see, that's for sure. Love Chip and hoping the best for him and his team. Bear, we'll get you out of here on this. If you had an absolute lock that you'd love to give our wonderful listeners, please, now is the time. What are you looking at, and give us some of your best plays of the weekend?
I think two of them stand above the rest for me. Iowa laying 3 against Indiana is one that I really like. I've talked about this game ad nauseum. I really think that Iowa just is a program that just kind of replenishes the upperclassmen every year. So I would, what Indiana did last year was a great story, but I think a lot of those numbers and a lot of the ways they won games really were not indicative of the type of record that they had. So I do like Iowa -3. And then I like Notre Dame on Sunday night, laying the 7.5 at Florida State. I think Jack Cohn is going to come in and be more than an adequate replacement for Ian Book. I think Kyron Williams is going to give that Florida State defense, which has been awful the last couple of years, a lot of problems. I think they have a matchup nightmare at tight end in Michael Mayer. So I think there are a lot of advantages here for Notre Dame. One game that just kind of is below the rest of those is Texas State getting 14 against Baylor. To get for Texas State and Jake Spavadal to get a Power 5 team on their home field and be catching 40, that doesn't happen very often. I'm not sold on Baylor without Charlie Brewer. I think their offensive line is bad, and I know Texas State is not really known for defense. But 14 points on your home field in a season opener, it's an offense that might have a little bit of a problem with the new offensive coordinator in Grimes and a new quarterback. Seems like the back door here is going to be totally wide open.
Wow, love that. Never afraid to keep an eye on the back door. Almost had one last night, by the way, in East Carolina, App State. But that's just how we roll, Bear. Can't tell you how much we appreciate the time, my friend. We look forward to doing it again next week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.
You do the same, Greg. Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.
All right, Chris the Bear Felica giving us the scoop here in week number one of the college football season. He's brought to us each and every week by our friends at Atlas Senior Living. They do independent living. They do memory care. They even have assisted living because they want to make sure that they provide an experience for you unlike any other. So you can go see them. If you're in Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, and the great state of Texas, Atlas Senior Living has a place for you. Whether you like painting or hiking or gardening, water aerobics, cards, current movies, large get-togethers, or even quiet evening, playing some ponies and playing some numbers and maybe making some picks against the spread, Atlas Senior Living will tailor an experience for you. So if you need to learn more, go visit atlasseniorliving.com. All right, when we come back, we will continue to break down the games from last night and start to look ahead of some of the games that are coming up tomorrow. And there's a bunch of them. Might even have to peek even a little bit further in advance, start to take an early look at what might be going on in Tallahassee when Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, ranked in the top 10 for the AP poll for the third consecutive year in the preseason. They go on the road to what should be a heavily improved Florida State football team. Take a peek at that game, take a peek at last night's games, and of course, get you ready for what is a full slate of college football next here on Mac and Cube in the Morning on Jocks 94.5. Game.
You know how I do it, man. It's Football Friday, dog.
This is a jam right here.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This is back in my day.
Look at you. Look at you.
All the kids nowadays, they say, oh, here's that throwback.
Yeah, right. I mean, I ain't going to lie. I was brought up in this throwback era, too. So, this is very monumental. I've scored a couple touchdowns here in this in a couple stadiums.
Young Jeezy.
You know it.
I think Kanye is in there, too.
You know he is.
Hey, okay.
Yeah, you know it.
I thought Kanye was in there. I knew it was Jeezy. I got that.
Oh, yeah.
That Jeezy album was fire. I mean, real good.
It was.
Don't hate.
Nah, you with it. I can take you to the cookout.
Love it. Be right there. Appreciate Chris the Bear Felica, John Parker Wilson joining us. It's been a really good show so far. Look forward to continuing to discuss everything that went on last night as we take just a quick look back because we've already hit it pretty much at length. Dame, did you have any takeaways from Ohio State last night? Because I felt pretty good. I felt pretty good about what I saw from the Buckeyes. They were challenged.
Yep.
And they answered the call. It wasn't flawless, but no week one performance ever is flawless.
Right, and just looking at C.J. Stroud, you know, he looked like a guy that was making his first start there early. And then once he settled down and got in his groove, he looked just fine. And you realize the playmakers around him are really going to help him out.
Oh, yeah. And I thought if they would have stuck with their original plan, where, hey, quick, easy passes, bubble, you know, quick out route, they kind of got away from it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they got a little aggressive, and he showed some of that inexperience, worked the middle of the field, results in an incompletion, tipped up, picked. So I thought that they kind of abandoned, they didn't put him in a great spot there in the second half, or second quarter, excuse me. If they would have just stuck to what they were doing, man, it was working. They were rocking. And they kind of got away from that a little bit. So I bet as they go back and assess the tape, he threw some beautiful passes downfield, and he'll have a ton of confidence going into next week where they'll take on the Oregon Ducks. That'll be a heck of a matchup, by the way. Heck of a matchup between those two teams. But, man, if I could draw up my week one performance for my team, that's about how I'd want it. Like, I want them to get challenged because I want to know where I'm weak. Show me my weaknesses. Don't let me go out there and have this flawless performance. I don't want to have this false sense of security heading into week number two and three and four. Like, I want someone to try to show me where I can be exploited so I can get it addressed. Because the longer we go without getting those problems exploited, the more we kind of become victims of our routine. So I think adversity in week one, I've always felt like this. Adversity in week one is the best thing for you. And Ohio State got a little of that last night, Dame.
Yeah, they got a nice hit in the mouth. And Minnesota is a team I'm probably going to pay a little bit more attention to up there in the Big Ten. It's going to be tough now with the injury. But I think Tanner Morgan is one of the better quarterbacks there in the conference.
Yeah. No, he's very solid, very accurate. Thought he definitely made some nice throws last night, and there was weather too. So I mean, it's not like he.
Right.
I mean, given the circumstance, I mean, he threw a couple balls over the middle that were really nice. I mean, I think Tanner Morgan's got a chance. I mean, he's got a real chance. Just hoping for the best with Mo Ibrahim. If he's out, the running back for Minnesota, after what was a weird injury to his left leg, I'm going to be so bummed. So
yeah,
fingers
you hate
crossed.
To see it too, man.
Say a prayer for him, man. I mean, say a prayer for him this morning. I'm sure he's going to get an MRI this morning, so he might already have gotten it. But if he hasn't, say a prayer for him right now and just hope the best for him, as he was very impressive last night and has been throughout the course of his college career. A little later this afternoon, I'm going to be heading to Tallahassee, Florida, to watch the Seminoles take on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Now, that game's on Sunday, and we're going to document here over the next hour 29, as Cole Kublik set to rejoin the show here in about 9 minutes. We're going to document all the games for tonight, all the games for tomorrow. Of course, here in about 9 minutes, we're going to talk an awful lot about Clemson, Georgia. That's the biggest game of the weekend. And then we're going to hit, really for the last hour, we're going to hit all the games that we think have some significance. So buckle up. We're going to hit a ton of games, cover a lot of things, hit a lot of ball here in the next hour and 28 minutes before we hand it off to the three-man front. But I want to hit first, because I don't know how much time we're going to have. We might try again at the end of this show, but I want to hit first the Sunday night action that I'm going to be on the call for. I think this Notre Dame team, of course, a lot of people looking at Notre Dame, wondering what the heck is Notre Dame going to be? Understandably so, because when you look at what Notre Dame lost, let's just start on the offensive side of the football. All right, they lost Ian Book. And people say, well, he was average. Well, guy was 30-5 in his career. The winningest quarterback in the history of Notre Dame. They returned just 55% of their offensive production. That's the fifth fewest in the FBS. Offensive line's going to have a couple of key pieces that they need to replace, most notably the left tackle, as Eichenberg's now gone on to the NFL. Guess who steps in? A true freshman named Blake Fisher. 5 stars next to his name as he was getting recruited, but he'll be making his college debut on Sunday night on ABC with about 10 million people watching. How will he do? We'll see. The running back core is elite for Notre Dame. Kyren Williams, Chris Tyree, Sebo Flemster, they are legit. I mean, really legit. I told you guys about Mo Ibrahim and how good he is. How quick, how sudden, how low to the ground he is. Kyren Williams is kind of built from the same cloth. Dude runs hard. You're going to love watching this young man. I know a lot of you watched him in the playoff game last year, but you haven't watched him maybe as much here lately, and you maybe haven't watched him as much against competition that struggled against the run, like Florida State, by the way. So keep an eye on him. The quarterback for Notre Dame is Jack Cohn, who a couple years ago led Wisconsin to the Rose Bowl. Lost that game, but played pretty decent. Gave Wisconsin a chance. Finished the 2019 campaign by losing to Justin Fields and Justin Herbert. It's not the worst.
It's not the worst losses you have.
I mean, it could be worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think Jack Cohn's pretty good. If you look back statistically, back into the 2019 season, he was the third. Finished third in the Big Ten in total QBR. And the guy's no slouch. To get him in a grad transfer situation is pretty dang good for Notre Dame. So we'll see how he fares as he takes the field for the first time with the Golden Dome. When you look at Florida State, Mike Norvell's second year should be very interesting. They have 10 super seniors. Last year, which is amazing to me, 75% of the roster was underclassmen, freshmen and sophomores. The youngest roster in the country. And they bring in 10 super seniors. some by way of the portal try to add some experience to that roster. And I think a lot of people that have followed the Florida State program closely feel like this is an opportunity for them to take a legitimate step forward. We're going to find out. Right now, there's a quarterback competition that is going on. We won't know who the starting quarterback is going to be. Even as the game broadcasters, we won't know. Because we're going to find out on Sunday night. It's between Jordan Travis, who's more mobile option, and Mackenzie Milton. If you remember Mackenzie Milton's name, he's from UCF a couple years ago. Injured his knee really badly. That was in 2018. And has since started a long road to recovery. And he's back to 100%. Maybe not the player he once was, but he's capable of playing the game again, which is amazing. Just an amazing story. The guy's won 23 consecutive games as a starting quarterback. Will he start on Sunday? We'll find out. The wide receivers for Florida State, not what they once were, not bad. Offensive line, steadily improving, still not great. Running backs, kind of a question mark as well. Florida State's got a bunch of question marks throughout their roster. But they have a good head coach. Mike Norvell is rock solid. And I think he's got a chance, I believe he's got a chance, to get this thing turned around at some point in the near future. It's just a matter of will they give him enough time. Going to be fascinating to see what Notre Dame and Florida State look like on Sunday. That'll be at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 our time on ABC. Looking forward to being on the call alongside Joe Tessitore and Katie George. Other games of significance. Of course, like I said, just a minute, going to talk a lot about what Clemson and Georgia are going to do in the game of the weekend. But I'll tell you another game that I think is somewhat fascinating. And I really don't think we're spending enough time on it. As much as I'd love to have hours upon hours to spend on all these games, there's just not enough hours in the week. But Louisiana and Texas is fascinating. Cole and I will talk about it here in a little bit. Texas, Steve Sarkisian, formerly of Alabama, going to be hosting the Louisiana Cajuns. Now, Texas, pretty decent-sized underdog against a team that's ranked in the top 25. But one thing that Texas has lacked for quite a while is physicality. I'm talking a team that will punch you in the mouth. We haven't seen that from Texas in quite a while. It's been a minute, maybe 10 years, maybe 15. Yeah, I know we played them in the national championship in 09. That was not a super physical football team. Just being honest.
I mean, y'all kind of took that, y'all kind of broke that wheel, so even if they were physical, it was quick.
Well, I can tell you this, they could throw it and they could cover it. They didn't like it. They didn't like it in the trenches, I can promise you that. All right? But this is a team that really needs to improve from a physical standpoint, because I'll tell you who is physical. That's the Louisiana Cajuns. I watched some of them last night against UTSA. Why I watched that, I'll never be able to answer that question. But I thoroughly enjoyed it because I wanted to see what Louisiana could do. And, man, they were pushing UTSA around. You say, well, it's UTSA. Yo, UTSA is not that bad. Not really not that bad at all. Not great. Not that bad. Probably around the equivalent of like a Nebraska. And Louisiana was pushing them around, denting that defensive front. Will they be able to do the same against the Texas Longhorns? Two Nick Saban disciples will be patrolling their respective sideline. Louisiana with Billy Napier and the Texas Longhorns with Steve Sarkisian. Will be really interesting to see what happens. That game will be at 3:30 Central Time on Fox. Course, I think most of you will have Alabama on your main screen, but if you have two TVs or if you have an iPad, man, throw that one on the side, because that game is really interesting. If you have a third one, throw Indiana and Iowa on the other side. Put that one on your phone, because that game is really interesting as well. Right now, Iowa, like you heard Bear talk about a second ago, a 4-point favored. All right, when we come back, Cole rejoins the show, and we'll start to break down the game of the weekend, the Clemson Tigers and the Georgia Bulldogs, right here on Mac and Cube in the Morning. Final segment of hour number two as our dear friend Cole Kublik rejoins us, got his equipment set up, just in time to talk about the biggest game of the weekend. It is the Georgia Bulldogs going on the road to the Clemson Tigers, I guess, if you want to call it a road game. I think Athens might be even closer than Clemson, but either way, it's like 3.5 hours away from Charlotte versus 2.5 hours away from Charlotte. Cole, it's going to be a great game, man, and we've talked a lot about the matchups in this game and the things that could potentially determine the outcome. If you had to boil it down to one specific matchup that you are really intent on watching, what matchup is it?
If it could only be one side of the ball, I mean, it would be both centers, but if it could only be one side of the ball, it's going to be whoever Clemson's playing at center against Jordan Davis.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, you could say the same about whoever Georgia's going to throw out there against Brian Bresee, but he might not spend as much time lined up over the center as we know Jordan Davis is going to. He's going to be there every snap, and that's what he's going to do. And he can wreck things in a hurry. And the biggest problem about that, Greg, is not physically what we're hearing, but we're hearing that there are snap issues in the Clemson camp at center. Well, if you're already having trouble either rolling the ball back there or sailing the ball over the quarterback's head, and now you got to go up against 6'6", 350, 360, who can toss you all over the place, you got problems. You got big problems on your hands. So that's the matchup that I want to see. Can Clemson neutralize things at that position? One, get the snap. Two, just get in front of somebody. And then three, also get the calls as well. Identify that defense, identify your point linebacker, get the snap back, and then just lay down in front of somebody and hope for the best.
You know, I think that's obviously getting the snap is obviously all points bulletin number one. I mean, that is inexcusable if you can't make that happen. But it's hard to do anyways, and then let alone in some cases you might be snapping with your offhand. Like, that's a problem. So if I'm the offensive coordinator, I mean, I have to do everything in my power. I mean, I'm talking everything in my power to make sure that that is not a factor in the game. Meaning, if I have to get the ball out of DJ Uiagalelei's hands within the first 2 seconds of him holding the rock, I'll do it. I mean, I don't care if I had to throw a screen behind the line of scrimmage. If that's the only thing I can do, because I cannot take negative plays. Not against that group. You cannot take negative plays against Georgia. And you got to hope that some of your perimeter weapons can make guys miss. And next thing you know, turn what would be an average play, maybe a 3 or 4 yard gain, into a 15 or 16 yard gain. That's what Clemson's done against teams that have great players in the front seven defensively. So I think that's going to be their plan. I really believe that's going to be their plan. Now, for Georgia on the other side, I wonder, and I just am curious, Cole, how hard would you be committed to the run game if, in fact, you feel like Clemson might not be at 100% in the front seven? I mean, would you be willing, knowing that your center's not at 100%, to at least try to impose your will along the line of scrimmage by running the football? Because Clemson traditionally has been pretty dang good against the run, and I would imagine this year they'll be pretty good against the run as well.
I think you're stubborn with it, Greg, but I don't know. I think Venables dictates this. And if he's playing extra defenders in the box, then JT's got to get him out of it. They can't sit there and just say, oh, we're bigger than badder than you when you're down a man or two in the box. I mean, if you're down numbers, you can't be stubborn with it. That's where I don't care if it's Jermaine Burton. I don't care who it is on the perimeter. For Georgia, you've got to find a way to make them pay. And if Darnell Washington was in the lineup and I knew Fitzpatrick was going to be healthy and Warren Erickson's in there, even then maybe down numbers, I would say, ride Kendall Milton, see what he can do. Ride Zeus and see what he can do. Zamir White, see if you can get some things going. You probably will still have some advantages physically somewhere, and that might work out for you. But considering all those guys are down, then I don't think you can play that game. I think you have to go out on the perimeter. You got to get Cook moving somehow, some way, put him in space, and allow JT Daniels to try to pick this defense apart. The identification part for him is going to be massive because we know that Venables can play some weird style defenses, and I think he's got some personnel that he's going to be able to move around and do different things with. Therefore, I don't like Georgia. They're not good enough up front, even with Erickson. That group hadn't played enough football together, and then you don't have your bonus bigs to be able to help win against those looks. So I don't think you can be stubborn with the run in this game. And we all think Clemson's going to score because of how good the quarterback is going to be and how good the wide receivers look like they're going to appear to be. So I just don't think you can play that game. You got to find a way to get points. And it's not a situation where I think you need points early, you need points late. Like, you just need points because Clemson's going to put some up somehow, some way. And Georgia's going to have to counter that. And I think if you're sitting there trying to hand the ball off 35, 45 times a game and play smash mouth football, that would be a losing recipe, in my opinion, for Kirby Smart and Coach Monken.
Yeah, and when I think about what Kirby Smart has been, I mean, we've all had the questions. He's been somewhat conservative with his offense in the big game. Is this the year he cuts them loose, right? I mean, you got to try to run the football. You can't just abandon who you are. Your running backs are too good. Your offensive line personnel is too good to just say, we're not even going to try because we have too much respect for what Clemson does defensively. Like, that's not going to happen. But at some point, I will be really curious to see if, in fact, the run game is not working. At what point do they completely abandon it? At what point do they say, hey, JT, man, we brought you here for a reason. Go out there and get it done for us. I mean, is that second quarter? Is that third quarter? I mean, at what point does he make that decision? Because that's been a decision that he's been kind of slow to make for a long time. And I don't think he's going to be slow, man. I think he's willing to give the ball to that guy. He's heard what people have said forever. He wants to empower the quarterback. He wants to empower the offense. And I really believe that he's going to cut him loose in a game like this. And if you're going to win, I think winning against the safeties at Clemson is the path of least resistance, or at least that's where it's been. You can beat those guys at safety. Corners are really good. Pass rush is really good. But if you can get one-on-ones with safety, regardless of who your top receiver is, those are matchups that could be exploited. Do you think they can get them, Cole?
One-on-one situations, yeah, I think they can occasionally. I don't think it's all going to be 50-50 balls. But, I mean, I always lean offense in that situation. How many great lockdown corners are there in college football? I don't know if there are a ton, and I think the advantage would be that you're not just – the advantage with Georgia might be, Greg, that you don't have a George Pickens or an Amari Cooper or an A.J. Green where you feel like you have to get the ball to that guy. Maybe the fact that you can spread it around a little bit offers up some advantages in the passing game. Maybe JT Daniels doesn't feel like he's got to go target one guy 8, 10, 12 times in this game. So if Kyrus Jackson has the favorable matchup – then maybe that's the direction that you go. If A.D. Smith has the better matchup, maybe that's the direction that you go. Rosemary Jack Saint's back in. He has a favorable matchup. You go to him. So, again, I think it comes down to the identification, the recognition from JT Daniels of where his best option is, not only from the play selection standpoint, but a matchup perspective, because it's not like Clemson's not going to have any good DBs out there. They will. But where are your best chances to win? And I think Georgia can get some. We act like these Georgia receivers are just like triple option receivers from the 50s. And they're not going to be able to get open. Like, the kids still have some talent, man. Like, I mean, I've seen Jermaine Burton make some plays. I've seen Kyrus Jackson make some plays. I mean, these guys, that just because they're not Julio Jones, it doesn't mean they can't make some plays for you. And I think Coach Monken's been planning on this the entire offseason. Now, it's not going to be exactly what they want because of injuries, but they have been preparing to be more explosive the entire offseason. Therefore, I think they're going to be able to find a way to get it done. I just don't know if it's going to be enough against a high-powered Clemson offense at the same time.
Yeah, that's, I think, the biggest question. When you think about the I love your comment about the wide receivers, by the way. It's like with these guys, we think that because they only had four stars, they're just not that great. You know, it's like, I mean, these guys are not chopped liver. And
exactly.
I think if I'm going to look at any other position, we've documented a lot what the second level looks like for Georgia. We've documented a lot what the front four looks like for Georgia. I am really interested to see how their secondary holds up. Because, I don't think Clemson is maybe as good at wide receiver as they've been in the past. But I still think they have some guys that are difficult to match up against. And coming into the year, if there's one position I was legitimately concerned about at Georgia – it was not even wide receivers. It was the corners. That was the biggest question mark for me. And you're going up against a team in Clemson that traditionally has guys that win those 50-50 balls. Now, will they this year? We'll see. I don't know. I think for their benefit, they better hope. But if they can't, for whatever, hold up against Clemson's wide receivers in those one-on-one 50-50 balls, those contested catch situations, that's when Clemson starts to really get you. So do you feel okay about Georgia's corners? Do you feel good enough about their corners to think that that won't be as much of a concern?
I think a lot of that depends on, are we getting the Justin Ross that we got a couple of years ago? Because if we are, then he is that guy.
We preview the weekend slate. We'll start with the Friday matchup, then we'll move on to Saturday. And then who knows? Maybe we'll even dive into Sunday if there's enough time. We're, of course, going to get you prepared like nobody else will here for the college football weekend that we look forward to for so dang long. Cole and I will be back to preview the weekend next right here on Mac and Cube in the Morning.